You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. At some point in time, the concepts of food and health and being a good person were merged and marketed. And out of that came things like the food pyramid, the four food groups, and many more ideas and guidelines that we've lived by. You might have thought all of that was science-based, but if you're smart, you know the government has been defining dietary standards and our idea of a healthy meal for 150 years or so. Charlotte Biltikoff has written a book about this history and about food and health and good citizenship. She's assistant professor of American Studies and Food Science and Technology at UC Davis. Her book is called Eating Right in America. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning, Beth.
So if I asked you to meet me for lunch for salad, you would think of me differently than I said, hey, let's have lunch and meet for burgers?
I might not be the best test case for your scenario that you set up, because I've spent many, many years thinking about the kind of preconceptions that we bring to those conversations. And what I'm really interested in is telling a history that helps people to think differently about the assessment that they do make of other people based on the kind of foods that they choose, the way that they are able or fail to meet the expectations of contemporary dietary advice.
But that is the point, that assessment and that history have made us draw conclusions that maybe we don't pay attention to about the character of a person, their morals, their education level.
Absolutely. We don't pay attention very much to what's going on behind the scenes of dietary advice. We tend to take it at face value and think about the facts that are involved, the facts of nutrition, you know, that are involved in my plate or in the food guide pyramid, for example. But the story I tell in the book is really about looking past that and thinking about the social and cultural aspects of dietary advice. I came to this project in an interesting way. I was working at a restaurant in the mid-1990s in San Francisco. It's called Green's Restaurant. Some of your listeners might be familiar with it. And I was reading about food history. And I was also getting involved in the food politics of the time. It was the mid-1990s. I was working at a vegetarian restaurant, and Alice Waters was beginning to advocate for a new way of thinking about what eating right looked like, what it meant to be a good eater, connecting that, as you know, to the environment. Excuse me. And I was reading about a group of dietary reformers who, at the end of the late 19th century, so 100 years earlier, had wanted to teach people to eat right because they believed that they could improve their characters, teach them moral values, solve major social problems by teaching people how to eat right. And I noticed an interesting similarity, that Alice Waters was essentially making the same argument that if you taught people to eat right, they would become more responsible citizens, and that you could solve major social problems by changing the way people ate. But what really struck me was that while they were so similar in their ideas about why we should teach people to eat right, their dietary advice couldn't have been more different. The turn of the century dietary reformers thought people should be more scientific, more precise, more rational, and sort of detached from the sensuality of their food. Alice Waters' story was entirely different. It was about reconnecting with history and tradition and sensuality. So I thought to myself, if the dietary advice, the content, could be so different, and yet the assumptions behind it so similar, there's something going on here beyond the facts, beyond the advice itself, that really needs to be considered and paid attention to.
So within the book, you do four case studies of four different reformers and the messages, the relationships that they're putting out, and they are each very different.
They're each very different, and yet in I look at the late 19th century domestic science movement, the World War II National Nutrition Program, which the domestic scientists were very concerned about caloric efficiency, getting enough calories for the work you had to do without spending too much money on food. During the war, the reformers were concerned about getting enough vitamins, and they talked a lot about variety. There was a basic 7-food guide. There were 7 food groups, and the advice was to eat some of each food every day. The real concern was about vitamin deficiency. And as you know, our moment, we have 2 dietary reform movements going on. One of them is the anti-obesity movement, which is concerned about population-level weight gain. And the other, what I call the alternative food movement, which is concerned about the relationship between individuals and the food system and using eating habits as a way to make change in our environment, both social and natural environment. But like I said, the really interesting interesting thing about this story is that despite these changes in nutrition science over this time period, in each of these cases, I found that the dietary ideals expressed social ideals. Mm. The social ideals also changed. Essentially, ideals of good citizenship, cultural notions of what it means to be a good citizen, changed over that same time period, just as the nutritional ideas changed. But the relationship between them stayed consistent. In each of the cases, dietary advice conveyed ideas about what it meant to be a good citizen in that particular moment.
So I'm going to summarize what you just said, and that is that the ideas about what's good to eat changed. The ideals about what it means to be a good person changed. But the relationship between being a good person and eating the right food stayed consistent.
That is exactly right.
And why is that?
Because the role of dietary advice isn't just to teach people the mechanics or the rules of good eating in relationship to physiology and the physical aspects of health.
It's more than nutrition.
It's more than nutrition. Ideas about eating right are always about conveying values and beliefs related to our ideas about what it is to be a moral person and a good citizen. That is fundamentally part of what they do. We tend to, like we were just discussing earlier, look at the facts, worry about our own biophysical health or maybe that of our children. But we forget that when we talk about good food, we are always also talking about good eaters, good people, right? And bad food likewise.
So back to my original question then, without asking you personally, there's a judgment right now in our culture that if I'm going to go out with you to have a spinach salad, I'm kind of a different person than if I want to go have burger and fries together.
Yes, let's make it a kale salad, shall we? because I think that that really evokes
then
a lot.
Heightened my level if I say
yes,
kale.
Let's trade in the spinach for kale, and we're really virtuous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And why is it so important for us as a culture that we're eating right? What is the rightness? And it's in your book title. What is right?
Well, it's interesting. I think that people are very. It's clear that people are very concerned about what is good to eat right now. People are asking the question in lots of different ways. You know, what is good to eat? And best-selling authors like Michael Pollan and Marion Nestle and all of the diet books and the diet programs and also marketing programs. Anyone that can answer this question, right, knows that people are very hungry to have an answer. What should I eat? People are anxious about this. And oftentimes we think that that anxiety comes from the fact that there's so much choice or because there's too little trust in the food system, right? And so we worry so much about this. But the history that I tell in the book suggests that we worry so much about what is good to eat because of the social stakes involved in eating right. Because it's not just about our physical health, but also about our sense of self and about our social standing, right? There's a lot at stake that we may not be conscious of, but really is part and parcel of the conversation about good food.
You're leading right into an example I highlighted in your book, and it actually speaks to the beginning of this program when we were talking about journalism and ideals. You write that in November of 1941, the New York Times reported that Uncle Sam was a, quote, better feeder than housewives. In fact, men in the army were fed better than 60% of the civilian population because he who does not eat the right food cannot work to his capacity. Now, there's a merge of a government message, a social message, a food message, a health message. Mm-hmm. It's all right there.
It's right. So I appreciate you bringing up that example. History is such a great tool for learning to see things differently. It's really hard to look around our present environment, the environment within which we live, and really look at things and see them differently, you know? But history can really help us. In that example, the relationship between dietary ideals and social ideals is stark. And so the book takes the reader through the late 19th century and through the World War II nutrition program. That's the example you just read is from that. To really lay the groundwork for learning to look behind the rules and the empirical aspects of the dietary advice to see the social and moral content. So that by the time the book gets to the present era, it has become easier, I hope, for the reader to look beyond the facts and the rules to consider that social and moral component.
It's being well received as an academic book and a well-researched book. And you are a chef and a writer and a researcher and everything else. You don't tell us what to eat. You don't draw any grand conclusions. And I'll just wrap this up by saying quickly that you really want people just to understand more about what it is we're doing when we eat and pay attention to our health, and why we've gotten to this point.
That's right, Beth.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is Charlotte Biltkoff. The book is Eating Right in America. We have much more on our website about it. And that's our program for today. So we'll thank you for joining us. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our senior producer is Jen Picard. Our producer is James Morrison. Insights technical director is Mark Jones. Insights executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks again for joining us.